welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm your host, Jason Verlinde. As always, that is John Rauhouse playing in the background. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for sharing the show. Leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts if you want to be my best friend. It takes about 30 seconds of your time. It does actually help other people realize that this show is cool and check it out. And as a small business owner, I know many of you out there are also small business owners. You got to keep growing. That's what we keep doing here at the Fretboard Journal. We keep expanding our offerings, keep expanding our podcasts. We want to spread the word about these shows. So on today's show, I'm bringing back one of my favorite people from the guitar industry, John Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully of Sully Guitars. I know some of you out there probably think we are primarily an acoustic guitar magazine. I get that a lot. I don't fully understand it. Ever since our very first issue, we've had electric coverage right alongside the acoustic coverage, but we do divide it up, which I know is more acoustic coverage than some electric guitarists want. But I love it all, and I hope you do too. And this is a perfect case in point. Sully is so much fun to talk to and has so many insights. He's got this Conspiracy Series line of guitars that's made overseas in Korea. We got to talk about that. We got to talk about CNCs and other stuff. His guitars are so dang cool. I want you all to check him out. I want you to follow him on Instagram. He does these crazy fireside chat type things every weekend to anyone who wants to tune in on Facebook. I love watching those. It feels like almost every week it's an AMA where you can ask him anything. Such a cool guy. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we get to that, I got to thank our sponsors, Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar, right here in Seattle, down the street from the Fretboard Journal. One of the great vintage instrument stores. You can check them out online on Instagram. You can go to mmguitarbar.com. You can find them on Reverb. An incredible array of vintage Fenders, Gibsons, you name it, amps, they've got it all. Pekin Nation is also sponsoring the podcast. One of the great music instruction portals around. I'm so happy to be working with these guys. I love all of their classes. You can use the discount code Fretboard when you check out. You'll get your first month free or $20 off of any annual subscription. Stringjoy Strings is also offering you 10% off of your first order. All you got to do is use the discount code Fretboard when you check out. It helps them know that you are listening to this show. Isotope is offering a discount. Fret10 gets you their discount if you want to get any of their software offerings. They are so great to have around if you're doing any audio engineering, mixing, if you have any glitches in your audio. That RX software is so dang cool. And last but not least, I'll give a plug to my own thing, the Fretboard Journal magazine. Our new issue, Dennis Fano's in it. John Page, former Fender Custom Shop guy, is in there. We have so many great interviews and stories in this edition. I know you all will love it. So go to fretboardjournal.com. You can either get the digital edition or the keepsake print edition. Just click on that subscribe button. That's all you got to do, folks. The other thing I've been asking you all to do is sign up for our Fretboard Summit, which is taking place in just 4 weeks now. August 24th to 26th in Chicago at the Old Town School of Folk Music. And guess what, folks? It is almost sold out. So if you procrastinated on this, I am sorry. By the time you listen to this podcast, the three-day all-access pass may be sold out. When it sells out, I'm going to give you a quick little hack if you do want to attend most of what we have going on, which is you could get an all-access Friday-only pass and see the JHS, Iron Chef spoof, the Germanium Chef fuzz build-off between Heather Brown and Robert Keeley in front of a live audience. You can attend all the cool stuff that we have planned on Friday, see the concerts, and then on Saturday, I don't think you're going to be able to get a Saturday-only all-access pass, but you could go to the guitar show only, the Luthery show, and see some of our favorite guitar makers from around the world showcasing their wares. It's a great way to experience most of the summit. You won't be able to hit all the talks and all the concerts. There's just space constraints going on. Saturday, a gazillion people are converging on this thing. It's going to be incredible. But you'll be able to go guitar shopping on Saturday, see all your friends from the industry, meet me, go to a bunch of great concerts on Friday. It'll be a great time. If you do want to see everything, log on to that fretboardsummit.org site ASAP and see if you can nab a three-day ticket. That will get you into the Thursday-only show for Jeff Parker and a bunch of other surprises and enroll you in the cool Micah Bruce-made guitar that we just talked about on the last episode of the Fretboard Journal podcast. Those are my plugs. I hope you enjoy this conversation with truly one of my favorite people in the guitar industry, John Sullivan of Sully Guitars.
It was hard, Sully, interviewing you because you're kind of an open book. You do these amazing weekly chats on Facebook.
My therapy sessions.
You're the face of your company like few others. So I'm kind of like, he's told his story so many times. What can I here do? But here we are.
Here we are. And so, yeah, now I feel bad. Because it's like, well, you've told your story.
No. It's great. I tell so many people to follow you. A lot of guitar makers aren't great at telling their story, and you are. And so I'm steering all sorts of people to you.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. That's awfully nice of you.
No, you're doing great work.
Wow.
Okay. Long, awkward pause. I think the reason that you've been on this podcast before, you've been in our magazine. I think you are associated with a higher gain crowd than the typical fretboard journal audience.
Probably.
But there is one model of your guitar, and you've probably heard this from other people, that actually I'm just in love with, the 71 Trella.
Oh, thank you.
And then I saw earlier this month you were doing your sort of budget-leaning overseas line was going to include that this year. And I'm like, okay, here's a great excuse to have Sully back on. So here we are.
Good reason. He's trying to sell you a guitar. That's great. This is perfect. This is what we call synergy. Yeah. And upward marketing or mobility or whatever, something that Mr. Donaghy would say on 30 Rock. So the Conspiracy series, which is our import line made in Korea. One of the things, so when we talked last, this was like right when this was about to happen, the first production run, like 2018.
I think you're right. And I want to hear how it's going for you and if it's lived up to your expectations for sure.
You know, when we were talking before this recording, we're talking about like setting the bar low, you know, like, well, you know, I don't hate it. You know, like for me with when I finish a guitar, you know, sometimes it's like, oh man, this is let me first preface it by like, I'm not going to send something out if I don't think it's ready to go out. But me being me, and I'll be playing something, and naturally, if I will say, you know, I don't hate this one. I don't have to love it. Like, you know, I don't hate it. I didn't really like it very much when we were building. Like there is one guitar that is, it's actually right there in the case. I made it years ago, and I'm still really mad at it because it was just such an, the build process of it was really unpleasant. It was a neck through Raven. It's Madagascar rosewood neck through blank, a couple pieces of blah, blah, blah. This piece of wood that I was working with was so dense, cutting it, routing it, shaping it. It was like routing into it. After a while, like my hands hurt just because just holding on and trying to move it, you know, and I'm not like going at it like a crazy person, digging off little bits and, you know, whatever. I had that guitar out and was hanging on the wall over here for, and I see it whenever I would see it, I'm like, I'm still mad at you. So I put it back in its case. It's going to go in that closet back there. I don't know. It was, you know, whenever I set out to, and I will answer the original question in a minute, but whenever I set out to like, if I've got, some really nice woods or whatever, and I feel like making something that doesn't really have an owner, I'm going to make myself, I'm going to make something really pretty, like a nice, you know, nice woods and pretty tops and blah, blah, blah. And invariably, they're always a nightmare to try and sell. Like they're gorgeous. Like I have this one that we, this amazing Koa top flame Koa with like rosewood neck. And it was from that same piece that jerk guitar was from, and it was just lovely. I took it to NAMM, and it's just like, oh my god, it's beautiful. It's the loudest guitar I've ever built, and I know that there's people say, oh, well, it doesn't really matter if it's acoustically loud. It doesn't matter if you're acoustically loud. And I'm just like, this thing, this is a glorious piece of something. This is, I like this one. Crickets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody. But so the Conspiracy series is our Korean production line guitar, based on the Sully Guitars designs that tens of people know and enjoy. And so I decided to, in trying to figure out what that product line looked like, I was trying to be very cognizant of not competing with myself. So like, I didn't necessarily want to we'll put some of the same features like stainless steel frets and, glow in the dark side dots and, hip shot tuners and stuff like that. But I also didn't want to maybe have binding on fretboards and headstocks and maybe not all of our inlays that we use and stuff like that, just to try and like, here's the flavor, this will get you in the door. And it's really great. It's totally cool on its own, but, I really wanted to keep the 71 Trella, which is, kind of our flag, not kind of, it's our flagship model. I kind of wanted to keep that as custom only. There would be a version of that guitar, like it was a flat top. But I had like a forearm bevel, and it was actually the very first 71 I ever made was in this kind of configuration. So I'm like, okay, well, it's got like a cool tie-in to history. So like this makes sense. But for this coming production run, I just decided that maybe I should rethink some of that. And when I look at some of the other companies that have a similar product offering, when I look at those, and really I'm talking major manufacturers, but it's like, okay, well, there's an LTD that's got a single cut and it's got a carved top and it's got binding. And, so I'm not saying that they're my competition because, sure. But it's the same, if we're looking at like the same price point, okay, this is kind of let's do it. So that's a very long way of saying, yes, the 71 Trella, it is in the, in this batch of the Conspiracy series. I'm pretty excited about it. I think it'll be cool. I hope that the people that, get them will agree with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back a bit, it's just even interesting that you do these Korean run guitars in batches. So,
yeah,
when does the order deadline hit, or is it kind of nebulous?
It's very nebulous. So this current run, we opened up pre-orders in the beginning of the month. The summer 2023 run, which is a little foreshadowing that maybe there might be a fall or a winter. Which would be like the first, generally I really only done like once a year, if that, because when I'm doing one of those things, it's managing a run and everything that goes with it. Like it's a full-time job in and of itself. And then, just kind of managing the pre-orders and all the planning beforehand. Well, what is this going to look like? Let's get mock-ups made, blah, 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 blah. Let's, try and beg people to pick up a press release. And then the order is placed, and then I can kind of go back to the main function of what we do and making guitars and having Saturday live stream therapy sessions while I eat breakfast. And but then the guitars come to me, and then everything shuts down, and we do QC. Even though it's been done, we're doing it again because, I know what the internet is like, and I've seen, whatever. And it's in my best interest to avoid those negative impressions on many levels. So, we go through every single guitar. We don't just, check a palette or a couple of boxes. Every single one gets gone over and... so that shuts everything else down. So that's, we haven't really done a whole lot of them. But it's one of the things that I'm trying to do as we're trying to grow and, trade it all for a little more. It would be a good idea to do more of these production runs, as we go, trying to do more of them more often. So, that is something that I'm committed to trying to do. And there are some models that we wanted to have for this run that we didn't, that might be part of a next one, just because, it's like, oh, we should do one of these. We should do one of these. Oh, we haven't done this before. That'd be kind of cool. And then, you run the risk of like analysis paralysis, and you have all of these options and like, oh, I can't choose between X or Y or Z, and I'm not getting anything. Well, then we all suffer, and then I just die a little more inside. So nobody wants that.
So this is a process that not many sort of small batch solo luthiers, guitar makers do.
It's not. I understand why.
You understand why, like, but it obviously makes sense because you're now maybe doing these seasonally.
Yeah.
Do you send them like a finished Trella overseas and they analyze it? Like what actually do they get from you to make the finished product?
I could. I send them all of the CAD files.
Okay.
And what's funny is, or at least funny to me, you know, this some of these manufacturers, you know, they build for, you know, for major manufacturers, and sure. You would kind of think it's a, you know, state of the art kind of thing, and in some cases it is, but you know, I have, you know, 3D models of everything, and I'm like, okay, well, like the first time we did this, I'm like, okay, well, here's everything, here's all the 3D models. We need 2D, man, like just line drawings and just like a, you know, like a cross section of a neck at maybe the third and maybe like the 12th or something. That's cool. I'm like, really? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, so I went through all of that work to make, and you want, okay. So, so I provide all of the files, and it's the same, you know, it's the same neck back shapes and body dimensions and all that stuff that, you know, we use here. So I know that a lot of things get redrawn and stuff like that. But yeah, so I send them those files. I could, if I wanted to send them a guitar for them to kind of replicate or to use as reference, I could, but, it's not super cost effective really to do that, because like I got to make the guitar, and then it's gotta be something, you know, this has to be like the example. And then I'm going to send it, which is, you know, hundreds of dollars. And then it's just going to sit in an office somewhere, when, you know, it could really just be helping others communicate the song that's inside of their hearts.
That's true.
Right.
I'm guessing a lot of guitar makers are apprehensive about even contemplating something like this, because they think they'll show, you know, they'll be at a NAMM 2 years from now, and they'll go down that far aisle, if there is a NAMM 2 years from now, they'll go down into that basement and they'll see some random company with their guitar design. Did that thought cross your path, or are there safeguards? Is it, you just, what's going to happen? It's going to happen. Yeah. Okay.
It absolutely has happened. So that's a fun thing to talk about, I think. So yes, let me say that the manufacturer that stole one of my designs, and I know what photo they use for reference. So like, this is not me just, you know, saying how amazing I am, because like, I know better than that. So when that happened, you know, one of the things you notice at NAMM is that sometimes there will be people in your booth taking very close-up photos.
Sure. I mean, that's, on one level, you've got to think that's flattering. On another level, you're wondering why they're doing that, right?
But yeah, and like, you know, you kind of know.
Okay.
I mean, you got to know, because like if they're badge, you know, like you do the whole NAMM, like, you try and be sly and like kind of check the badge out, you know?
Yeah, of course.
You know, and it's not, you know, they're like a manufacturer, an exhibitor or whatever. I'm like, you're not with the press or whatever, but you know, you also don't want to go, why are you taking, what are you doing? You know? So there's a, So that I knew that it was a matter of time for that to happen. Some things that you can do to prevent that, we'll get an IP attorney, mm-hmm. and get your stuff trademarked. And that, I mean, that's expensive. It's something that I've spent a lot of, I mean, it's been a few years in the process that we've been going through it, and it's expensive. But you know, a lot of people will, you know, when like certain manufacturers go after others for infringement or perceived infringement, regardless of how well they may or may not have enforced those things or how consistently they enforce those things. You have a right to do that if it's your thing. And, you know, one of the things that people say, oh, you can't really trademark a body shape. Of course you can. And I have. And, you know, but it's the other thing is like, well, you know, it's up to you to, you know, how you now you have to figure out how you're going to defend it. Mm-hmm. And that is also expensive. But, you know, so one of the things that we can at least try and do is with the overseas manufacturer who does have a knockoff of one of our models. It's not the 71, but, you know, we can, in theory, prevent them from being imported into the U.S. Hmm. I don't know how realistic that is, you know, but those are, you know, it's some of it is inevitable. Makes me real angry. Not yeah. gonna lie. And, you know, there are other sides of it, like, and maybe people that, you know, might build different instruments where this isn't a big deal or it's considered a form of flattery. I do not consider it a form of flattery under any circumstances whatsoever. Mm-hmm. My problem, maybe, but yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a thing.
And without naming names, like it's probably coming from the same factory that you're about to place an order with? No. Okay.
No, different country. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you first said there are safeguards you could do to prevent this, I was thinking you were going to like suggest fog machines and strobe lights so that their photography at NAMM would be really bad. But.
Well, you know, so I wasn't at the last NAMM, like many people. I am going to be at NAMM 2024, but I'm going to do it a little different. I'm going to be under the Jamie Gale umbrella, mm-hmm. in the guitar showcase. I think, you know, and I've known Jamie for a few years and his family, and they're just lovely. I love them dearly. And I finally got around to kind of joining them. I think that it might be a good time to bring out the fog machines and pyro.
I'm all for it. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Megan Wells and I can hang out and I'll play Every Rose Has Its Thorn on her very expensive, lovely arch top. She is my sister in color. And we'll have pyro. I think she'd be down for that.
I'm all for that.
Megan, you can message me if you're not cool with it. If not, if you
it's
are
happening.
Cool, it's happening. I've got, you know, I still have smoke bombs from when I did the Kiss tribute thing. We can kind of put them inside of maybe some sound poles. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? We probably won't do any of that, but we might.
So just to keep going through the process of this guitar line, because it's fascinating. I mean, nobody ever talks about this stuff. What's the turnaround? I mean, I'm going to guess. I shouldn't presume. We're talking dozens of guitars, not hundreds? Or are we talking hundreds of guitars will be made? Do you want to tell me? You don't have to tell me.
There's no reason not to. Okay. I think that's really just ego. But usually, like, most batches are about 100.
Okay.
Because, you know, we have some pre-orders, and then we get extras. And, you know, I don't have someone that is, you know, we don't really have the luxury to say, oh, here's... Let's just throw $100,000 into, let's just buy a bunch of them. You know, we have to go off of pre-orders and kind of pick and choose what we do. But yeah, it's about that much.
And then how long until the guitars show up on a pallet or five?
Well, that can fluctuate. You might recall there was a thing going on in the past couple of years where there might have been some problems.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like it took a little while for the mail to get through. And, But so beforehand, usually it'd be about like 120 days generally. There's invariably that's the time frame. Invariably, you know, that's if, you know, the suppliers that they've got, you know, like, we got to get pickups from these people, we've got to get this from these people, and, you know, provided all of those things line up, then, you know, that is a reasonable turnaround time. It's very, but, you know, like the run we did in 2021, you know, I placed that order in March of 2021 and we got the guitars in June of 22. Mm-hmm. So that was a little while. And I think, you know, the factories are still, maybe some have recovered. You know, I don't spend a whole ton of time with my ear to the ground about, you know, turnaround times and all that stuff, unless I know that I'm going to be ordering something that, you know, kind of, hey, remember me? And check
suddenly in. You're an importer exporter.
Yeah. Vandalay Industries, importing and exporting. When I moved out of the garage and into the shop, I was really nervous about not having the name on, like, a company name on the door.
Of course. Yeah, you got it.
And there was a part of me that was like, I'm just gonna have it listed to Vandalay. But then I'm like, ugh, you know, like, then you're gonna have to tell all of your vendors that, you know, the Sully Guitars address is care of Vandalay Industries.
And sure.
It's a good bit, but I didn't do that. It does say Sully Guitars on the door, which is fun.
Okay, so then more questions.
Yes.
You get these guitars, a bigger number than honestly I thought, which is amazing. That's awesome. Okay. How many folks do you have helping you?
Well, it's mostly me, except, so the last run, I have two people that work with me part-time.
Okay.
The last run, I gave, it's like this Adam, who is like my BFF. He's an amazing guitar player, and he would come to NAMM with me, and he's just been like, he could be, you know, we used to drive out to NAMM. Like, we'd rent a van, we'd fill it, we'd drive out to NAMM, we'd stay for the week, and then we'd drive back 2 days. And like, so he's with me the entire time, and he hasn't straight up murdered me. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone other than Adam that would fit into that category. So Adam is a delight. And, you know, but Adam's not a guitar builder, but I can teach Adam, like, okay, so we're going to put the capo here, you're going to hold the string down here, you're going to put this little measuring thing here, and we want it to say this. Sure. And so I would give him like a kind of a basic checkup, you know, and it's like, first, you know, open it up, look for, make sure, you know, make sure the neck is attached, you know, like, you know, make sure we've got a thing, there aren't any visible signs of damage. And, you know, he would have this checklist of things to go through, and then he would kind of triage everything, and then I would kind of finish stuff off. And so now, there's Adam, and then there's young David. And young David,
what happened to old David?
Well, he's not old David yet. He's young David. Okay. Someday he'll be middle-aged David, but for now we got to live in the now. Okay. Young David, he's here Mondays and Fridays, and young David, he's mostly like sanding monkey. So bodies come off the CNC, he makes them nice and smooth, and you know, he's learning. I've been giving him more things as we go. So when these guitars show up, you know, I imagine we'll all have our capos out, and we'll hold it down here. We'll get our little measuring tool here. And, you know, it's like a lot, one of the things that people kind of talk about is, oh man, I don't measure things. I just go back feel. I'm like, that's great. But like, whatever. But also, like, you got to have a foundation, especially, you know, so yeah. And especially, you know, if you're trying to have, like, before these things go out, we want the string height here, we want the relief here, because we want the nut height here, we want it intonated, you know, and all that stuff. We want to set these parameters. So if we meet all of those things, we know we've at least done our part.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So yeah, it's good to have a foundation.
YouTube is filled with lots of entertaining videos about like bigger manufacturers with quality control issues. It's like a sport. How much work are these? Are 90% of these things pretty dialed in when you get them?
Well, you know, I guess I don't know the YouTube thing that I don't, you know, it's, you know, I, 15 years ago, I had a bunch of guitar building videos and, you know, Sully's Guitar Garage. And I never really meant it to be an instructional thing. It was really more like this old house, but with better hair. And,
sure.
You know, it's just like, this is what I'm doing. I'm Bob Vila and I'm going to bind this headstock. But yeah, the whole, like that whole thing, it really gives me bad vibes about, you know, QC and like, oh, that kind of goes to the whole internet comment thing that we'll steer clear. But like, as far as, you know, do we do something to every single guitar? Yeah. But it could be like, I'm just going to scrape the fretboard, you know, just because it looks like it needs it. You know, sometimes we have to level some frets. We usually cut nut slots a little bit, you know, because I think that's normal. You know, something coming out of a factory. And when I'm saying that it's coming out of a factory, I don't mean that it's, oh, you have to put work into them because they're just garbage. It's nothing like that. It's just, you know, generally something out of a factory, the strings are probably going to be a little bit higher. The nut slots are probably going to be a little bit higher because it's easier to remove material than to, you know, add it. So, you know, yeah, like we'll touch up some nut slots. We might have to do some fret leveling. There might be some finish work that needs to be kind of touched up a little bit. Some of that is my own paranoia, you know, but, you know, it's something needs, you know, to be, things need to be tweaked. Things need to be set up just like, I don't know, I guess you know, if you buy a guitar at a big box store, you know, you're probably going to have to do a little bit of that too.
Yeah. Do they come to you all at once?
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah.
So this slows, I mean, you weren't kidding. This definitely changes the pace of your custom builds and your handmade builds dramatically. Yeah,
it absolutely shuts down everything for, I think this last round, Adam and I think we got through that last batch in about 3 weeks. So that was pretty good because it used to be like a month. Mm-hmm. A month is about 6 weeks where it was just me kind of, you know, going through all these things. Cause you know, there's just boxes and boxes and boxes and you're opening stuff. And, you know, it's funny. I go through this process of, you know, I open up the first box of when they first get here and take a look, I'm like, oh my God, it's amazing. And then I put it back and oh my God, it's amazing. I'm like, oh my God, whoa, put this one over here. Oh, it's amazing. And then I open those ones again and I'm like, oh, okay, well, no, let me scrape that out. You know, and like, I kind of see these things. It's not, you know, I don't really have a point with that, but it does shut everything else down.
Yeah. It's wild. I mean, you mentioned Jamie Gale, who runs this incredible little mini guitar show inside of NAMM with all these boutique vendors and Megan Wells.
Yes.
You know, even your Made in America line is, you know, kind of affordable, relatively speaking, to a lot of these handmade guitar makers, right?
Without a doubt.
A 71 Trella, the import version is like $1,600, right?
$1,499.
And then the one that you would make personally by hand or however you do it in Texas would be
I mostly use my feet. Hand built, it's whatever.
I know.
Mid three K. Yeah, no, in the realm of the small bespoke boutique builders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on the shallow end of the pricing pool for sure. I think probably some of that is self-esteem, but you know, I still got to sell guitars. So, yeah.
And how far out are you booked for those foot made,
How far out are you booked for the Made in Texas model guitar?
You know, right now, 8 months to a year.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm really working on, like, I really want to get it to like 6 months. And I think that we can. Well, I know that we can. There has to be some aspects that need to be kind of tweaked. And some of it is like my own, like, ability to kind of focus on something.
Sure.
You know, because like we can get the body done and I know that it'll be sanded and pretty much paint ready, that day or, you know, the next, same with next and all that. Well, next take a little longer, but, you know, there's, it's not just the one guitar that I've got to make. There's, I know we've got like 60 something in the queue right now. And, there's also the, you know, running the business and doing timesheets and, whatever.
Yeah.
All the other stuff. I've got somebody that's been helping out on the social media side of things. Kyle, who is lovely, and we love Kyle. And so that's been a huge help. So, you know, so one of the things when I do these, you know, Breakfast with Sully Facebook streams, I never, you know, much like with this podcast, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. And it just goes, for better or for worse.
Sure.
That's kind of, you know, like a decompression thing for me. That's the word I'm looking for. We just kind of like decompress and there's a whole bunch of stuff that we'd like to do. And it's also nice just to kind of interact with people, you know, like we're doing now.
Yeah. Yeah. You keep saying the word we, but I'm guessing this is largely you in that shop, right?
There are more than one. I mean, you know, that's something I think I got in the habit of sort of, you know, say the collective we, even when it was just me, because I don't know why. And sometimes I kind of roll my eyes at myself. I'm like, who's we? Well, you got some voices in there. That's fine. It's what it's us.
Exactly.
Yeah. But no, I mean, you know, like Adam, Adam is really great at wiring. So he handles that stuff.
Okay.
He's learning how to run the CNC. So, you know, there's stuff that he can do with that. He's, you know, he's responsible for running the laser. So we've got a laser to, you know, make our little inlays and control covers and stuff like that. And I know that we could be using that like a million times more than we do, but, you know, what do you use that thing for? Hollow block inlays. But, you know, it's gotta be done. So it can do that. And, we do, get to do some fun things with cover plates and stuff like that on the laser. So that's fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not just me. I mean, it would be, I think, pretty arrogant of me to say that by now.
Yeah. Okay. You have a beautiful shop from, I forget what video that was, or if it was, maybe I found it on TikTok or something.
Probably. Yeah.
You're on TikTok now too, which is a whole nother thing we could talk about.
To be. Yeah, you do. I got sucked into TikTok maybe a year ago, and oh my goodness, you can really, there's a lot of cat videos out there.
There are.
And I see all of them. And, so I was maybe a little busier on TikTok like a year or a year and a half ago than I am now. But, you know, since we've got stuff to promote, I'm going to be more active on TikTok.
Are you able to set boundaries for yourself? So it's like, hey, I'm going to post my work thing on TikTok and then I'm like, no. Okay.
Not usually. It depends. It depends. Yeah, I haven't been sucked into it as hard as I was originally, but yeah, I can lose a couple of hours. Just go.
I guess to use the often used phrase, being authentic. I guess to be authentic, you actually have to use TikTok once in a while to actually know what you should be posting to TikTok. But still,
yeah, I think so. You know, and I don't know. I like. You know, as much as I look like I got kicked out of Whitesnake and probably just, you know, stayed in that, I like knowing what the kids are up to, you know, And you know, there's that saying, those that have the youth have the future. So I'm very interested in all that stuff. And, you know, and I'll tell you, I found a lot of bands that I really like from TikTok. I was blown away at the fact that, like, the whole 90s shoegaze kind of style of music is alive and well. I was elated to find that out, because yeah, I found that out through a bunch of bands on TikTok, and I'm like, oh my God, you guys are amazing. And so now I can listen to that stuff, and that's fun.
TikTok's cool.
I mean, I guess it depends.
Do you still have students come and learn how to build guitars with you?
So I stopped doing classes in 2020. I forget why. I remember. Everybody was dying. And so I stopped doing that. And, you know, in July of 2019, I got a CNC machine. And since then, everything is done on the machine. With the exception of headstocks, I'm still trimming headstocks on the router table just because. And when it comes to classes, you know, in the shop now, we got plenty of room to have them. There's a part of me that wants to do them again. But I don't want to go back to doing these things by hand, for a few reasons. Number one, because that's just not how, you know, I'm not building guitars that same way anymore. We're using robots and everything's, that's got its own set of problems. But so that's how we're building guitars. I don't want to go back to doing it the old way. And there were specific spots in those classes when I could see people going through, like, okay, so this is like a three mood swing process. Like, you know, so it starts out like shaping the back of a neck, and I'm like, you know, there are a lot of people have, you know, you just shape, you know, you make a template of a neck that you like, and then you just cut off the wood until it's like that. Great. And I have a little method that I could show people and how you kind of plan things out, and you're drawing and you're basically making facets, bevels. And we're removing that wood within these two lines here. And then once that's done, we're going to make more lines and on until we get a neck. And we're going to use the tools in this particular method, not like this, not like this, not like this. And invariably, I could see people doing it the way I said, not like this, not like this. I'm like, no, we're going to long strokes this way, not just, we don't want to have little waves. And, you know, and you see, like, the excitement, like, oh yeah, all right, this is going pretty good. Oh my God, what have I done? And then I come and help out. And then it's, you know, so it's like a three or four mood swing thing. And there are other parts of it, like, you know, all the hand sanding. And, it, you know, there have been numerous times when people are like, I can't believe you do this all day. I'm like, yeah, you're right. And then the next day, you know, like day two, everybody comes back like, oh man, I am sore. I can't believe you do this all day. I do. So if I were to do classes again, it would have to involve the robot somewhat. So because I want people to feel like they have had an experience and they've actually participated in it. But, you know, let's also maybe try and minimize, if we can just, you know, minimize like the three mood swing tasks down to maybe two. Or one and a half, that would be good. So, but yeah, I would like to do classes again, but you know, the other thing that is a little challenging for it, and this is a oh poor you kind of situation, is you know, I gotta be up the entire time. I have to be on the entire time. And it's, you know, Monday, the old classes were Monday through Saturday from, I don't know, 10 to 4 or so.
Sure.
That was difficult to maintain, being kind of on and also explaining to someone who's never turned a router on before how to use it in a fashion that won't scare the hell out of them, and cause bad things to happen. So it's a little exhausting. But again, like, oh, hey, let me know when you have real problems, but, I'm open to doing it, but just haven't yet.
Yeah. You mentioned the CNC and the laser. Is there one piece of tooling, a plec or something that you daydream about, like one piece of gear that you're like, this would make my life easier, I think?
Well, we have access to a plec machine. It's not ours, but there's a shop that's local. And so once something is like in an assembly stage, we'll get strings on it and that'll go get plecked. And you know, yes, especially this is something that I need to agree with for this particular podcast. Yes, I agree that a plec is not necessary. And yes, anybody that's worth their salt in leveling frets doesn't need a plec machine. Couldn't agree more. However, if it's one less thing that I can focus, that I have to worry about, and I know that it's going to come out okay. And there's been times when it's need to be, you know, a plec job is needed to be tweaked. It's not very often. And, you know, like it makes sense for me. And it's also, you know, I don't think I really talk about or kind of use that as a selling point. It's not a secret, but I don't like, oh, everything is plec. And maybe I should, but it's nice that just to not have to really worry about that. Because really, it's like, I think there's a romance that is attached to the craftsman. And we're wizards and all that stuff. And there are truly, truly ridiculously talented people in this industry. And I mean, so many of them I find inspiration of are building acoustics, but like, I'm never going to make an acoustic guitar. Absolutely not. Not until you can put a Floyd on one, I guess. and you know, I find a lot of inspiration in stuff like that. Like what, Michi Matsuda does, but you know, there's a whole like, you know, the whole like handmade thing, it means something. And when I say that, that is very dismissive, and I don't mean it to be very dismissive, but, number one, how else are you going to make something? Yeah. And also like something can be handmade, but it doesn't mean your hands are very skilled. And there's this whole like thing. And like, you know, before we moved over to the CNC handling the majority of the cutting, I would just say, you know, my guitars are handmade because that's my only option right now. I'm glad that you really like them and I'm making them as best as I possibly can. But like, as soon as I don't have to do this anymore, I'm out, because like the repetitive damage that it's caused to my hands, not worth it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's, I'm going to give you back that soapbox.
I think the handmade thing, I mean, I use it a lot accidentally. I think sure. It's mostly just to try to describe somebody who doesn't have 10 employees, who's like been toiling away and their livelihood depends on them building one guitar at a time. Sure. And it's not a company. And I don't know. I mean, even some of the highest end acoustics now have CNCs going on. I mean, it's in the last 10 years, so much has changed. Like CNCs were a bad word 10 or 15 years ago, I feel like. And now.
Yeah, I think it's possible. You know, I guess my question about the whole handmade thing is like, well, where does it stop? You know, like, okay, so yeah, sure. A CNC machine roughs in a back shape and I've got to take it and glue it and blend everything in and get all of the cutter marks out and refine a volute and refine some heel transitions. And yes, I could certainly do all of that in the programming and we're working on it, but like, is that no longer handmade because a robot went thump, 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 and didn't blow things out on that particular one? You know, I don't know. That's a whole thing. It's like one of those unanswerable questions, but but then again, on the other hand, I know I was putting something on our Reverb page, and there's this check mark, like, is this a handmade item? And I don't remember if I checked yes or not. I might have, because like, I'm like, well, wait a minute. It's not like I put like a blank on a table, pushed a button, and then got this. you know, I still am doing this. I'm still, you know, we're scraping, finding, and we're doing all of this stuff. And there's plenty of handwork to be found. So, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I would think checking that box, it's almost like saying as is. It's like, oh, well, of course there's a flaw. I told you it was handmade, you know, in case somebody down the line has some problem.
Sure. Yeah. So I need to go back to saying everything's handmade. Yeah. Yeah. I told you. I've got nine fingers. I can't hold a router.
It's me with a little hand drill over here. What do you expect?
Yeah. What do you expect? Yeah. I've got some tall scissors I'm working with. Yeah.
What's your sense of the guitar market in general? Like, is it, I think most people will say that it's slowing down in terms of orders and stuff. Like, is that,
I don't know. I can only really, I guess, speak for myself because I know that I don't have a whole lot of interest in being aware of what other brands are doing, or people that aren't friends that I'm not friendly with, but like, you know, what like Paul Reed Smith is doing, I could not care less. I hope he's had a sandwich. I don't know. I don't pay too much attention to that stuff, but I think, you know, maybe right now, you know, 2020, people were home, maybe had some expendable cash, maybe orders went up. I didn't really see a dip in 2020. You know, there were also a lot of other factors too. Right now, I can say that custom orders, as I had, like, maybe are a little bit slower, but we're also in the very slow time of the year. You know, but on the other hand, there was something that there was a spec build that the paint process was just finished. And, you know, this morning I made it available and it sold. So that's good, because now we can eat the good cat food tonight. So, you know, the industry as a whole, I'm sure, is probably slowed down. I think that, you know, it's all cyclical anyway. It just kind of, it's just the way it goes.
What's your sense of when an order comes in? Is it often somebody who already has a guitar and they're buying a second one, or like, what's your percentage of returning customers versus new, to coin Shopify or some online shopping cart phrase?
I don't know. But we do have a fair amount of repeat clients, and I love you all dearly. Like the person who bought the spec build that I made available, one of the spec builds I made available today, I'm like, I recognize that name. He bought a t-shirt from me in 2012. So I'm like, all right, right on. We, you know, when we started working with Michael Sweet from Striper, a lot of his fans started buying guitars. So there's the Michael Sweet fans that have come in, and they're not just buying Michael Sweet guitars, which is great. You know, we'll make them whatever they like, as long as it's something we would normally make. I don't know. I think that there's a fair amount of people who are repeat clients. There are a fair amount of people who are who had Conspiracy Series guitars and want to get a custom. And, you know, there are people that are, you know, that fall into that category of, you know, like, oh, yeah, I followed you for a few years and, you know, now I finally want to make it happen.
Yeah, that's cool. It's diversified.
That's the key.
Are you courting artists that you love, or are they finding you when you mentioned?
Well, you know, there are the thing that's a bummer about all of the shoegaze bands that I love, that I find on TikTok, they're all playing jazz masters. And I'm never, ever, ever going to make a jazz master. It's just not my vibe. We have a Stardust for you if you would like that. And I hope you will. So there's that. Always looking, and, you know, but like, I don't have like an A&R person that's, you know, or, you know, that's actively scouting people. Anybody that does this, you know, you're going to get a lot of people reaching out to you. I find that when people reach out, in a form letter kind of way, or like, how do I get sponsored? Or, you know, we should work together, and or you've never played one, how do you know? you know, I'm always very, probably not. But yeah, it's something that happens usually pretty organically. Somebody, you know, that I'll find on Instagram or TikTok or somebody that, an existing artist might turn me on to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's usually pretty organic.
Yeah. You mentioned, and obviously if anyone's made it this far into this hour long podcast, they are a true fan or a fellow guitar maker.
Or they're sleeping.
Yes, they can't turn it off. Their phone is broken. Yeah. When you, like I said, you tell your story great. You also mentioned that you have a social media helper. Was there a bit of a transition there where you had to trust someone to post things in your voice or be the Sully guitar's, you know, voice, and you were so used to doing it that, was that hard?
Yeah. So not with dear Kyle, who we love dearly and is lovely. I had, another friend who was helping out, and that was kind of like this was maybe, this was a while ago, but, we would kind of, one thing that was great is he would always call me on Fridays. Like, what are we focusing on? What are, you know, like we would have all the kind of posts scheduled out. So like I could season to taste if necessary. But, you know, I had to learn that just because that isn't exactly how you would say something, get over yourself. It's fine. And Kyle, who's been helping since, June, July, he's great at writing copy and all that stuff. So, it's been, you know, he's out of the gate been great. And, you know, the other thing too, is like, while it's nice of you to say that, you know, get used to telling your story and doing it well and stuff. You know, at some point I kind of turn into a doll where you pull the string and I'm just repeating the same thing. You know, I started playing when I was 8 and just because it's nice to have somebody else's kind of input. I mean, obviously if something is, I would not and do not want to say that. That's a completely different issue. I haven't run into that. But yeah, even with all the other things too, when you have people that are, you know, joining you in getting the guitars made, you know, there is a little bit of letting go and trust. And, you know, there's some like, oh, wait, no, that's not like that. We need to, you know, but it's a process. I'm, you know, but on the other hand, it's like, if I don't have to, you know, if you can handle the social media posting and that sort of thing. And if it's good and I don't have to worry about it, then that is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm looking to shirk all of my responsibilities, but maybe just most of them.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. You found someone and you love them. That's awesome.
Yeah. He's great. Somebody I've wanted to work with for years before he was available. So it's worked out good.
Is this person's full-time gig posting on social media for various companies?
He helps us out and then, he does some work for another and that is it.
Wow.
Yeah. Good gig if you can get it.
Yes, sir.
How do I do that? Wait.
Exactly.
Wait a minute.
We talked a lot about the conspiracy series. When is there a deadline for folks to place an order if they want one?
So the way that we'll do this, like is probably how I did it last time. We'll kind of close pre-orders maybe by the end of July, early August. Mm-hmm. And then I'll place the order because obviously I'm going to order a lot more than what was pre-ordered. So, you know, you get your orders and then you order a couple for safety in case something, you know, happens. And then maybe you order some extras. So maybe what I might do is, you know, the 71 Trellas, we might make a couple available like through the website that you could still buy. Cause it's kind of like everybody's pre-order is there. I still have some for safety. We still have a couple of extras and of those extras, maybe we'll make one or two available. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Sure.
So that usually works out because it's invariably, as soon as you close the pre-orders, someone's going to be like, oh man, I missed out.
we talked a lot about the Trella because I was selfish and it's the guitar that speaks to me, but is that even the best selling on the pre-order front, or is there another guitar we should be talking about?
Trellas and Concords, yeah, are the front runners. And I'm happy about that because the 71 Trella is absolutely my favorite model. I've got the most, sweat equity involved in it. If I could only make one guitar, it would probably be that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Are you designing new stuff that's on the horizon?
Yes. Any guitar builder that is listening to this, you're probably aware of the Luth group.
Yeah. And, I'm on it. I'm silent. I'm in the corner.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Dahlia, one of the guys from the Luth group, he's doing some CAD classes. So for people that want to learn how to get into that, he's doing it. And I've been using this program that he was doing the class on for years. And with a lot of programs and things, you know, I learn what I need to do the thing that I need to do right now. I don't generally go through like tutorials and stuff, and it just because I don't have the time or capacity or whatever. So I could get around in it enough, but there were definitely aspects of using that program that were points of pain, as we might call it. And so I learned some things from Tom's class, and you know, we're gonna model a guitar. And I'm like, well, I've already got everything of mine. So let's just for the class, all right, fine, we're gonna do something else. I'll still use one of my headstocks because I don't feel like designing a headstock, blah, 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 blah. But I wound up with a model. And we made the first one, and it's I'm just checking everything, you know, to make sure it's geometrically sound and whatnot. Before
is
that
a name? Can you tell us the name?
That's the thing, is that it does and it doesn't. The name that I wanted to use actually is French, because I'm fancy. And I think
handmade.
What's that?
Whatever handmade is in French.
Right, great, right, right. well done. Say du moins. But the problem is, like, we're not a French guitar company. You know, we're not established in France selling to the population of France. We're in America, mostly selling to Americans. And if you have a new model that is this French word, I don't think people are going to pronounce it very well. And I think that if you're going to name something, it's probably in your best interest to make it easy to say or to pronounce. So I've been kind of, you know, going back and forth because like this word also, this French word also sounds like something else phonetically that could work, but I'm like, but I really like this one. And they're like, well, you can't use that one. You have to use. So yeah, it's young David calls it the hot saucer.
Okay.
Cause he's funny. So I've just been calling it the new one lately, and David calls it the hot saucer because he's been sanding the hot saucer for a while.
Is it a dramatically different shape than what we're used to, or something unique, or iteration?
I don't think it's particularly unique.
Okay.
But I think that is helpful in that it is a model that I think will have a wider appeal than, I mean, you and I know that a 71 is cool, but like the guitar buying public are a lot like cats. I've been building those things for over 10 years now, and I'm still trying to get, you know, we're still getting people that are like, you know, when I first saw that guitar, I thought it was really weird, but I see it now and I get it. Oh, thank you. But so I think this will have like a wider initial appeal. And there are some pictures of it. I shared some pictures of its construction on Instagram within the last month.
Okay.
So it doesn't have a name. And I think like I'm going to have to just give it a stupid name because the entire time I'm not going to come up with something better in my head because I already know what I want to call it. So I guess I'm going to have to move to France, which is something I would be interested in anyway.
Hey, yeah. I love that we talked for an hour about the inner workings of your company, but what might actually be keeping you up at night is whether or not to go with the goofy French name for this model.
It's not even goofy. It's cool. It's just, but it's like, you write it out. How do you pronounce that? Damn it. So yeah. What's in a name?
All right. A lot, apparently. And for folks who have no idea what we were just talking about, the Luth Group, two O's, is Ian Davlin's, to call it just a Patreon is not really doing it justice. It's this amazing little tiny but fast-growing community of guitar makers helping other guitar makers and sharing expertise. And I mean, it's an incredible resource that didn't exist a few years ago. I don't know how long it's been going.
A couple months, I'm guessing, or less than a year is what my understanding is. And I joined, you know, just because, mostly because Tom's class, I'm like, oh, you know, I haven't had the chance to check any of it out. A lot of it is, there's a lot. So you should consider joining the Luth Group.
Yeah, and it's very cool.
Sound like me, but I mean, whatever, your mileage may vary.
We talked about having some sort of Luth Group happy hour at the summit in Chicago next month. And I think that's happening. I should follow up with him.
Probably should.
There are many, many members of that group coming to our little Chicago guitar party.
Nice. Hey, can I ask you a question about a guitar that's hanging on your wall?
Oh, sure.
So the gold thing to your left behind you in the corner?
That one?
Yeah. Is it gold? What is that?
That is a Harmony Stratotone that had its finish taken off.
Okay.
Do you want me to grab it?
Well, sure. The reason why I asked about it is because that there was a Stumac video where Dan was, it didn't have a truss rod. Those guitars were made without truss rods. Yes. And the neck was bowed to the point where it was unplayable. So the point of it was to take the fretboard off and install carbon fiber rods. That's fun to say, carbon fiber rods. Mm-hmm. To stabilize the neck. And it was that guitar, same color and everything. The little Richie Valens deal.
This guitar here, I'll grab it.
Okay. This is great for the people that are listening. They're going to love this. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I'm shouting. He can't hear me.
So that guitar, I'll probably cut this out. I don't know that anybody needs to.
No, leave it in. I've already kind of talked to the people that this is great.
So an oft-mentioned figure in the fretboard journal world over the last year who was at our fretboard summit last year. We just talked about him, Duncan Price. He's on Instagram as Disco Baby, is just a mad scientist from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And he is doing incredible, mind-boggling work with Sustainiacs and fretless guitars, and nuts. He is incredible. He posts on Instagram from time to time stuff that he's worked on and is finally ready to sell, or just stuff that he fixed up. And this was a Harmony Stratotone that had the finish taken off and was gutted, and he put the pickups, installed a second pickup in it, and did some sort of magic to it. Everyone who's played it is like, this is incredible. And I am honored to have one of his creations here, because last year at the Fretboard Summit, he busted his ass to be in our Iron Chef spoof nickel wound chef competition. And he was, as I think we can all agree now, robbed of the title. So now I own not only the guitar that did win, that Creston Lee of Creston Guitars didn't even want to keep.
Oh,
but I have something from Duncan here. So it reminds me of a fuzzy, warm feeling I had in Chicago about a year ago when I see these two guitars here.
Sure. Okay. Nice. I love it. See, now you got to leave that in because this is all relevant to the conversation. See?
Yeah. If you are not following Duncan Price, prepare to have your mind blown.
I'm going to, he's just Disco Baby on Instagram?
With a K and B-E-B-E.
Oh, Disco Baby. I like it. D-I-S-K-O.
Oh, your world is about to be rocked. You have never
I'm excited. I'm following him right now. And I couldn't be happier about it.
Yeah. Yeah. He is, he's an amazing person and blew many a mind at the Fretboard Summit last year. So
excellent.
Yeah. Excellent. You might have a fretless guitar. Then think you won't even have to worry about frets.
Yeah. I do have a repeat client. I do have a repeat client that's wanted me to make him a fretless guitar. And I'm like, dude, I've like had one in my hand once and it was an aluminum fretboard. And I'm like, what do I do? So, and you know, what do I just make the thing and like, just don't put frets in? It can't be that easy. But you know, so I was actually thinking about that earlier today. I'm like, well, I wonder if you can make like a carbon fiber fretboard. And so, yeah, but this is what I'll probably think about later in the afternoon or not. Nobody knows.
All I ask is that when you finally do have a name for the new model, you've got to share with us what the aborted French name was, because I'm curious. I'm dying to know.
Well, for the people that are still listening.
Yeah.
I was going to call it La Reine, R-E-I-N-E.
What does that mean?
It means the queen. Because the guitar itself, so a lot of people are like, oh, I see a lot of Steve Stevens Hamer in it. I'm like, oh, okay, it's a double cut. It was really, it's a tweaked Red Special.
Got it. Cool.
I love Queen a lot. I love Brian May, who just had a birthday yesterday. We had a great time together. Do his music, and he was doing whatever he was doing, and. So like I was trying to come up with like different kind of spins on like, I mean, you can't call it a Fred special and like I wouldn't anyway, but you know, I'm just trying to think of something and I'm like, Loren, R-E-I-N-E, looks cool. Yeah, it fits. No one's going to pronounce that. But then there's a bird called a wren, W-R-E-N. We have a model called a raven.
There you go.
And a wren is kind of a little short, kind of stocky little bird, and like this body shape, it's got some hips to it. So it fits, but it's like it's not what I really wanted it to be. So I think what we'll just have to do after we wrap up here is I'm just gonna move to France, and then it'll work out fine.
I love it. Perfect. All right. Get a place with a big enough spare bedroom for us visitors, because we'd love to come see you. We'd love to do your podcast in person.
No problem. We'll make it all happen.
All right. Thanks, Sully.
Thank you.
All right. That was my chat with Sully. I hope you enjoyed it. Please, please, please leave me feedback on Apple Podcasts. Like I said, shoot me a note to podcast@fretboardjournal.com if you ever have any questions or comments. And next week, we'll have even more installments for you.